like to call this meeting of the House State Affairs Committee to order. The time is 3:20 on Tuesday, May 13th, and we're here in room 120. Members present today include Representative McCabe, who was just here, Representative Holland, Representative Himshute, and Vice Chair Story, as well as myself, Chair Carrick. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Our record secretary is Andy Magnuson, and our moderator from the Juno LIO is Susan Quigley, and our committee aide today is my staff, Stuart Relay. We have four items on today's agenda for House State Affairs: taking action on House Bill 43 from Representative Schrage, House Bill 11 on PFD contributions to the general fund from Representative Prox, and consideration of amendments and taking action on House Bill 24, aggravating factors at sentencing from Representative Josephson. I'll just also note for the record that we were just joined by Representative Vance and Representative Moore. The first item on our agenda today is House Bill 43 on elections reform by Representative Schrage. We did have four hearings on this bill, and at our most recent hearing on March 25th on this legislation, we did consider amendments. The updated version of the bill includes amendments that this committee adopted and incorporates the work from that hearing as well as our previous hearings on this reform package. That has been shared with members and is also posted on BASIS. With that, is there any additional brief discussion on House Bill 43? Representative Vance, do you have a comment?
I do. I am curious as to the intent of the sponsor and what he hopes to do with this bill. I know that there are many areas that he was mirroring the work in the Senate, and that bill has undergone a lot of changes. And one key distinction that this bill makes versus that one is what the sponsor of the bill was wanting to do by expanding early voting to essentially early voting month. And in conversations with the division, we uncovered a lot of difficulties and added expense that would take by expanding early voting to a month. And with all of the iterations of this, and especially the language that still remains in this bill, it opens up our early and absentee voting in such a way without added security measures that I will absolutely and in no way be in support of this bill, because we need to bring voter security. We need to tighten up the security on our elections so that people have confidence that their vote counts. And this bill does not do that in any way, shape, or form. And so I will be a no vote on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Any additional comment? Representative Holland?
Great. Thank you, through the chair. It would be helpful to me, and this is perhaps just a reminder that I need because I haven't looked at it recently, but to follow up a little bit on the previous comments, I'm curious, do we now have some clarity from Division of Elections on how this earlier start date will affect any of the other dates for the candidates and the ballots and backing up to the primary? I was concerned in our discussions that at 15 days where we were before, that there was a very tight window for all the steps that have to happen leading up to the primary and then the decisions that are made from the primary to the point of having a final ballot that can then be distributed and published in different ways. And have we gotten to a clear answer that this 30-day window and the division's steps that they have to do, assuming that the primary is still held when the primary is currently held, is there time for everything to work? I had that question before. I know we brought it up. I don't recall that I had a really clear, confident answer in my own mind. And I'm just wondering if we've gotten more information or can get some, please. Thanks.
We can ask Michaela Thompson, who's the operations manager with Division of Elections, if she has a response to that, briefly, if possible. Ms. Thompson, do you have any follow-up information?
For the record, my name is Michaela Thompson, Division Operations Manager for the Division of Elections. Through the Chair of Representatives, extending the early voting period to 30 days prior to Election Day does cause considerable issues in our timelines. There are deadlines, such as withdrawal deadlines for candidacy, logic and accuracy testing that has to happen with the equipment, also shipping out the supplies to all the areas across the state, checking in ballots. Additionally, between the primary and the general election, there is the rural education attendance area election that occurs in between those two elections. So yes, the timelines are very tight.
I also just would note for the committee that the current committee substitute of House Bill 43 is a 20-day extension, not a 30-day extension. We had amended that in our previous iteration of the bill.
Follow up.
I will note we have a member that has to get to another appointment, so we're trying to.
So I guess I was looking at N, and I need to probably find the other one. So at 20 days, is there time for the primary election held on its normal date for everything to happen? And I accept the general answer, which is that it's going to be tight and hard, but will it work? Can it work? Thank you.
Ms. Thompson?
Of course. Through the Chair of Representatives, it all depends on when the dates land, depending on when the primary election is held, and that a lot of the deadlines are dependent on days after certain dates occur. So it will be very tight, especially for the primary election, actually, with the candidacy withdrawal deadline. It all depends, though, on the specific date and then also the number of days that have to happen after an election date. It's very driven by the specific, 45 days or 50 days before the primary election, for example.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson, for that response. Seeing no further questions from the committee or discussion, I really appreciate the committee's work on this legislation. I hear the concerns from Representative Vance, and I really appreciate you registering them and the amendment process. I know there's likely to be a pretty robust debate, both in the Finance Committee on this legislation and on the floor. And so I look forward to continuing those discussions in those places as well. At this time, I would turn to Vice Chair Story for a motion.
I move that CS for House Bill 43, also known as 34-LS0231-G, be moved from the House State Affairs Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Object.
There is an objection. Representative Vance, did you want to add to your objection?
Yes, I would. You mentioned that you imagine that there would be considerable debate in finance and on the House floor, and I hope so. But the reality is, I don't believe that that's going to happen. I think the Senate omnibus election bill has been noticed for Finance Committee tomorrow for public testimony, and I would encourage people to speak up on that. And then it is not noticed again in the Finance Committee after that, and I imagine that they will be trying to move it to the House floor, where we will have full deliberation. I've been watching both this bill and the Senate bill very closely, been working on that and trying to come to agreements and compromise. For my entire tenure, both bodies have been working on robust election bills and have gotten zero because there's been a lack of a spirit of compromise. I had hoped that the bill would be in this committee, where it should be, in State Affairs, as a policy committee. This current bill before us was set, as far as my understanding goes, to mirror the work being done on the work that was done in the other body. However, that didn't happen. So some of the changes that are currently in this bill that we are about to vote on include same-day and late voter registration. And that jeopardizes the voter roll accuracy, one of the number one issues that we face and that will help our elections is cleaning up the voter roll and making sure they're accurate and up to date. It would expand that even more by having permanent absentee ballot status. That is absolutely risky. It has been dangerous. You've heard testimony after testimony of Alaskans saying that they're still getting ballots from 10 different individuals at their home, and they've lived there for an extended period of time. So that is very risky to our voter rolls. Voter roll maintenance does not include citizenship verification. We've heard in another committee about the Samoans who thought that they were able to vote. That is now being put into question. And we need to be checking this to make sure that people are on the voter rolls who are technically allowed to vote. There's a need for more auditing and recount. Special needs ballots enable ballot harvesting. We need to tighten that up. Witness signature requirement is removed, and there's no other protection on that. I could go on in all of the different areas how this just opens up to voter malfeasance that lowers people's confidence in our elections. This bill, as written, is not balanced reform, and it is fundamentally weakening Alaska's election system. It removes the guardrails on absentee voting. It includes same-day voter registration, and it does not include ballot security with backup procedures. Our Division of Elections has been, the data has been compromised several times since I've been elected by countries that include China, Iran, and the Ukraine. I don't know about you, but those are some countries who have some big issues going on right now with the United States, and they have breached the data in our election system. We need more data security. This bill does not do that. So I'm going to do everything in my power to continue to work towards a true compromise that benefits all Alaskans. However, we have 1 week left in this legislative session. If there is any will by the governing majority to do that, you're running out of time. So it's unfortunate that here we are yet again with an omnibus bill instead of being singularly focused on solving one issue at a time that we can come to an agreement with. So with that, I maintain my objection.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Is there additional discussion? I just wanted to also note for committee members, I have a list here of the similarities in both the Senate version of this similar bill and the House version and the differences. So just for members' information, I believe it's important to pass along this House bill today because it's a good thing for this work of this committee and the work done in this body to be a ongoing part of the final days of negotiation and discussion around elections reform. A couple of the differences between the two bills, just for members to note, is that House Bill 43, which we're imminently taking action on, includes an expansion on early voting and absentee voting, which we amended from 30 days down to 20 days, but still up from the current amount. This version of the bill includes same-day voter registration, more robust language assistance language, allowing absentee ballots to be opened and preliminarily counted 10 days before an election to get faster results to Alaskans. In contrast, this version does not include several components from the bill that's just come over from the other body. The components of that bill that are not in this legislation include having tribal ID as a form of ID for voting, having a ballot tracking program, increasing penalties and expanding definition of election interference and misconduct, including permanent absentee voting, including more robust voter roll cleanup provisions, requiring overseas ballots to be returned 10 days after an election, down from 15 days, removing a requirement that absentee ballots are returned after the deadline and able to be used in a recount, requiring that Division of Elections have a secure ballot drop box at regional elections offices, codifying a process of challenging a ballot count, allowing absentee ballot cover sheets to be transmitted electronically, requiring the redistricting board to be subject to the Open Meetings Act, and for redistricting board members to do POFDs, or public official financial disclosures. That legislation also includes AI and deepfake definitions and prohibitions, and requires the Division of Elections to do a report to the legislature on recommendations for expansion of early and absentee voting in rural communities and low-income neighborhoods. So those are the differences between the two pieces of legislation. Again, I think it's important to highlight them, and it's important to have both pieces of legislation, at least on the table in the same committee, available for internal and committee discussion as decided by the members. And I just think it's important to be transparent about what those differences are as we go forward and able to discuss them in both on the record and candid conversations, you know, in the building. Any last discussion or comment? And the objection is maintained. So will the clerk please call the roll on House Bill 43?
Representative McCabe.
No.
Representative Holland.
Yes.
Representative Hemshoot.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Vance.
No.
Representative Moore.
No.
Chair Carrick.
Yes.
Four yea, three nay.
And on a vote of four yeas and three nays, this committee substitute for House Bill 43 has been moved from House State Affairs Committee. We're going to take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork at ease.
Let's do it, guys.
Yes.
House State Affairs is back on the record, and the next item on our agenda is House Bill 11, PFD Contributions to the General Fund, from Representative Prox. Representative Prox is at another hearing presenting another bill right at this moment, but I'd like to invite his staff, Riley Nye, to come and join us and introduce the bill. And it appears we also have, for members' information, Genevieve Wojcik from the Permanent Fund Division Director online for questions. Thank you, Mr. Nye.
For the record, Riley Nye, staff to Mike Prox, representative from District 33, North Pole. Through the chair, thank you, Chair Carrick, and members of the House State Affairs Committee for hearing House Bill 11, PFD contributions to the General Fund and Permanent Fund. And Representative Prox apologizes for not being able to make it today. House Bill 11 provides Lassens with a simple, voluntary option to donate all or a portion of their permanent fund dividend directly to the state's general fund or the principal of the permanent fund. This bill adds a button to the existing electronic PFD application, allowing donations in increments, 10% increments, up to the full amount of the dividend. Under current law, Alaskans who wish to return their PFD to the state must first apply for and receive the dividend, then go through the extra step of mailing it back. This is an unnecessary barrier that discourages those who are unwilling or that are willing to contribute from doing so. HB 11 removes that friction by creating a convenient, secure mechanism to give back as part of the already familiar PFD process. The infrastructure for this kind of giving is already in place. For years, the PickClickGive program has enabled PFD recipients to donate to over 630 qualified organizations through the online application. These organizations have benefited significantly from their visibility on the state's website. However, the General Fund, which supports vital public services such as education, public safety, and transportation, has never been included as a donation option. HB 11 corrects that oversight. Representative Prox introduced this bill because Alaskans come to Juneau every year asking for increased funding for state services, and many of them say they would gladly give up their PFD if they knew it would help fund education and essential infrastructure. This bill simply gives them the opportunity to follow through on that willingness. By providing a clear and easy path for voluntary donations, we make it possible for those who want to contribute more to do so without affecting the PFDs of those who choose not to donate it. If enough Alaskans give voluntarily, it could help reduce pressure to cut the dividend for everyone. House Bill 11 is about empowering choice, encouraging civic participation, and strengthening our state's finances without mandates or reductions. I urge your support for this practical and meaningful legislation. And I would welcome any questions that committee members may have.
Thank you, Mr. Nye. Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you, through the chair. I'm particularly curious whether this donation pathway for going to the general fund provides any relief from the federal tax liability of the full gross amount of the PFD distribution. There was a proposal by an economist, Matt Berman, from the ICER to create a netting process before distribution so that folks would not be subject to IRS tax payment to the full distribution. Would this amount that is withdrawn and paid to the general fund still be taxable income on a 1099 to the recipients?
Through the chair to Representative Holland, thank you for the question. I spoke with Ledge Legal about this very question, and what I was told by them was that this, you would still be federally taxed or would see federal income on it because you have directed where that your PFD is to go to the general fund. The fact that you've directed it means that you'll have federal income tax on it.
Thanks for checking.
Representative Himshute.
Yeah, thank you. I have a couple questions through the chair. Mr. Nye, since the permanent fund, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but since it comes out of the general fund, why wouldn't someone just not apply? Why would they apply and then return it?
Through the chair to Representative Himshute, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Am I not being clear? Okay, so.
Works for me, but.
What is the point of applying for it and then returning it? Why wouldn't you just not apply for it in the first place if your intent was to return it?
Through the chair to Representative Himshute, if you don't apply for your PFD, then you won't be counted as a PFD recipient. And so when calculating the size of the PFD, you won't be included in the calculation for the size of the PFD. So essentially, because you didn't apply, the money that you would have received gets split up between all of the other recipients. So they'll receive a larger PFD because you didn't apply for one.
And so, yeah, somebody would have to know that. So quick follow-up, question. In Section 2 of the bill, I just want to make sure I understand what we're getting into here. Page 3, line 26, it says, money from a contribution under this subsection or from the dividend fund may not be used for administrative costs incurred in implementing this subsection. So if there are administrative costs, how are those going to be paid for? Because the fiscal note said it wouldn't cost anything. Does it just not cost anything to do this? Or if it does cost something, how are we paying for that?
Well, through the chair to Representative Himshute, this change came about last year in the House Ways and Means Committee, and we originally had this in here so that they could use part of this money for, I believe it was 7% of it for administrative costs, and the House Ways and Means Committee decided to remove that last year. But speaking with Representative Prox, he wasn't sure that that was the right choice because using this 7% for administrative costs, he was telling me that he thought it might be a good idea to use some of that for advertising and to let people know that they can donate their PFD back to the general fund and help state services. And I believe there was a second part of your question.
I did have another question.
Okay.
Follow up.
Okay, thanks. One last question through the chair. I know in the fiscal note it doesn't, there's no ability to predict the kind of revenue this might generate, but there is a procedure now for you to send your permanent fund dividend check back. Do you know how many people do that?
Through the chair to Representative Himshute, I asked this question of the department, and they said on average they get about one person that sends their check back a year. And for the record, it wasn't our office. So.
Okay, thank you.
I put myself in the queue, Mr. Nye. I'm just hoping you could elaborate on those page three. Sorry. Page 3, line 10, 11, and 12. What are contributions under each of those three reference statutes? Contributions, donations, and contributions.
Through the chair to Chair Carrick, the contributions under 43-23-130 is the education raffle, and then 43-23-230 is the pick, click, give, and then lastly, 43-23-135 is Rep. Prox's bill here.
Okay. I see. So just as a follow-up, so I guess I'm just reading this out loud and asking you to confirm. So basically this section just says if you put in $1,000 of pick, click, give or other donations and the dividend's $800, then they'll just assign priority order in that order. If you gave to all three of those things, the donation to the general fund would be the last item to be fulfilled with that PFD.
Through the chair, that's correct.
And as in one more follow-up on that, garnishments are above all of these sections.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Representative Moore and then...
Thank you. Through the chair, how would this affect tax, the federal tax, if they were to receive a dividend and then immediately send it back? They've applied for it. What is the breakdown there? What is the, if any at all?
Through the chair to Representative Moore, if they were to donate their PFD back to the general fund, they would be taxed under federal tax laws the same as any other income they've received.
A tax is still expected with returning it. Okay, thank you.
Representative Himshute.
Thanks. Through the chair, I just want to make sure I understand the priority order thing. So your vision for what it would look like would be you go through your application, and then before you submit, you would do your ed raffle, any amount you chose. Mm-hmm. So assuming it's not your full dividend and you just chose one for 100. Mm-hmm. Then it would be your pick, click, give, any donations you want to make there. And then whatever's left, there would be a button where you could say, I want the rest of this to go back to the state.
Through the chair to Representative Himshute, that's correct. So if they say they were to do $100 for the education raffle, $700 for the pick, click, give, and there was a $1,000 PFD, they had $200 left, and say they wanted to donate 30% of their PFD to the general fund, which would be $300, though there was only $200 left after the education raffle and pick, click, give, that $200 would go to the general fund. Or if there was none left, then none would go to the general fund.
Okay, thank you.
And follow up on that. So is the election for a donation to the general fund a percentage, or is it a dollar amount similar to pick, click, give?
Through the chair to Chair Carrick, as written in this bill right now, it would be in increments of 10%, unlike the pick, click, give, which is in increments of $25.
Got it. Okay. Okay.
Follow up if I can.
Yeah, Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair. I want to come back to a bit of the question from the discussion we've had so far amongst the three of us here on this side of the table. Did you investigate, and is there a pathway that would allow somebody to essentially register for the PFD, but in doing that say they didn't want it, so that it could stay with the general fund as opposed to being distributed to everybody else, but avoid the tax liability of it having not been distributed? Was there an investigation? Was there a way that anybody had identified to do this, or is there just no way to allow a person to say, I don't want it, the state can keep it for the general fund without it being considered a distribution that they've made an election on?
Through the chair to Representative Holland, thank you for the question. That's a good question because I did research that quite extensively. I asked a number of people, and at first I was told there's no way that this could be done, and it's impossible. And after considerable thinking, trying to think outside of the box, I kind of came up with this loophole, and I spoke to Ledge Legal, and they told me that that could probably work. And what I thought was, you have this PFD application, and you have an eligibility portion of it, and you have an application portion of it. And I was thinking we could split this we have an eligibility portion and an application portion, and then at the beginning of it, you would have a notice saying that if you fill out the eligibility portion but decide not to apply for the PFD, your PFD will be sent to the general fund, and that you would sign it acknowledging this, and then by filling out the eligibility, they found you are indeed eligible to receive the PFD, you didn't apply for it, therefore they would send it back to the general fund.
As a follow-up, that would be a potentially interesting amendment to consider, although I do recognize that many people would actually want to split it up a lot of different ways, so that would only, I think, is a novel way to solve it that would work in the case of a complete transfer of that. But I appreciate you doing that extra digging and creatively finding a possible solution for that. So thank you for that.
Any additional comments or discussion? Representative Vance?
Thank you. Just to add on to this idea, I think the bill gives people the freedom to make the choice to divide their dividend up in a variety of ways. If we were to just administratively do something, I think that would diminish the whole point of giving. And if people just didn't want to apply the way the legislature has been making the decision about allocation of the dividend, it's generally they look at how many people have been applying, right? And then they make the decision. So if people over time chose not to apply for the dividend because they didn't want to receive it, I think the legislature, at least in recent practice, has been keeping up with that. So I support, you know, keeping with the bill in allowing people the benefit of the choice of giving. This is their money, and why would we want to remove them from that benefit, that gift? There is I think it should be a conscious decision that they either choose Picket Gliv, the education raffle, or going back to the general fund, because their circumstances could change that year, where maybe they said, hey, I have a high school graduate that I want to give, you know, $100 cash to out of that dividend. And I think that the idea of this continues to respect the rights of Alaskans in that autonomy with their dividend in a variety of options. And I do have one question, though, in that it's mentioned taking the 10%. How did you come to that versus mirroring the $25 increment that is already in practice?
Through the chair to Representative Vance. This change came about in the House Ways and Means Committee last year, and we originally had this as $25 increments. And so for one reason, if you have them both in $25 increments, I guess it kind of makes it cleaner having it in increments of 10%. As far as if somebody donates to education raffle, pick, click, give, and there's only $800 left, having it in 10% increments didn't mess things up. But I don't know exactly why the committee chose to do that, so I'd be happy to get back to you and provide you a response.
Okay. Through the chair, I apologize that this was kind of asked before, but just wondering about, you know, the calculation if someone were to do that, you know, that our dividend isn't always round numbers, and that's nope. Why is that probably the reason that it came down to percentages rather than square dollars?
Through the chair to Representative Vance, I can tell you that in the increments of 10%, it works. And if you have donations to the education raffle and the pick, click, give, 10% of the dividend of what's left, they can give whatever is left to the general fund. And Ledge Legal said it works.
Follow up. I also think it would potentially be worthwhile to ask our permanent fund division director about the ability to administer 10% versus $25 increments.
Well, now that I've thought through, it makes sense. But I am curious as to what the option will look like. If you say, because I was looking at the chart provided, the pick, click, give chart.
Mm-hmm.
And on step 8, it has a little scrolly bar that says amount. And then you submit changes. So either this is for the sponsor or for the division, just so that we're clear on how this is literally going to work, is for this bill, the change in step 8, would that be, is the plan to have an option that says remainder, 10%, 20%, how is that logically going to work?
Through the chair to Representative Vance, it would be in increments of 10%. And so you would select 10%, you'd select 20%, 30%, and whatever the remainder of the PFD that is left after education, raffle, and pick, click, give, if it is less than the percentage that you have elected, it'll go to the general fund. If you have left $400 and the percentage you have elected is only $200, then you'd receive a $200 PFD and $200 would go to the general fund.
I have a follow-up on that. So is it 10% of the remainder after education, raffle, and pick, click, give, or is it 10% of the overall amount? And so this is where I'm appreciating this line of inquiry from the committee, because I'm a little confused how 10% makes more sense than $25 increments when that's what we're using for everything else.
Through the chair to Chair Carrick, I believe it's Representative Prox's intent that this would be 10% of the PFD, not 10% of the remainder.
And so as a follow-up to that, if the PFD were $1,000 and you had 100 to one education raffle ticket, 100 to pick, click, give, you had $800 left over. That would be a 10%, and you want to do a 10% contribution to the general fund as well. That would be another $100 as opposed to 10% of $800, which would have been the remainder. Okay. And if that number is not achievable with the remainder that's left over, then you receive a check in that amount. Is that correct? Just as you do currently with the remainder after pick, click, give donations?
Through the chair to Chair Carrick, if you've elected to give 30% of your dividend to the PFD and the remainder is less than 30% of the PFD, It's my understanding that what's left would go to the general fund.
Okay.
Is that, through the chair to Chair Carrick, does that clear things up?
Yeah, I think it would be helpful to ask Genevieve Wojcik about administration. And I just wonder if, Ms. Wojcik, if you could provide any commentary on the administrative challenges or benefits of doing it as a $25 increment or as a 10% contribution increment.
For the record, Genevieve Wojcik, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Hi, Genevieve here, Director of the PSD Division. Thank you for the question, Chair Carrick. The administration of this, whether it be in $25 increments or in percentages, that's a policy call. We can make it happen either way. The fiscal note is an indeterminate note because we will have one-time programming costs no matter what, whether it is a percentage or a fee. So we will have to add that button and have some background logic to make sure that it works, but it can be either by a percentage or by an amount.
Okay. Thank you. And I guess one last question that I would have of the bill sponsor is it the bill sponsor's intention to have, if someone elects to do a contribution to the general fund, that that be the whole of their contribution remaining after any other deductions take place? Or would the intention be to have folks able to, say, buy an education raffle ticket, do a pick-click give donation, do a donation to the general fund, and then potentially have remainder that they receive in a dividend? If there's any preference for how people, how do you anticipate people potentially using this?
Through the chair to Chair Carrick, I'm not sure I'm understanding your question, but if I understand it, so you're asking, can they donate to education raffle, pick, click, give, and is it the sponsor's intent that they could have some money left over if they choose?
Well, so just to be clear, right now when you apply for your dividend and you make these selections, I know personally what I do is I donate a portion of my dividend and then I, knowing that the dividend will likely exceed the amount that I'm donating, know that I'm probably going to receive a check. I don't know what the dollar amount is when I apply for it, mm-hmm. but I know I'm going to receive a check after those pick-click give donations.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, for example, the dividend's likely to be in any given year more than $400. Mm-hmm. So if I donate $400 on pick-click give, I expect I would probably still receive a check. I recognize that the sponsor has talked a lot about the people coming by and wanting more services mm-hmm. from state government and wanting to potentially donate their entire dividend. Is that more the vision for the legislation, or is it more the vision that this is an option and that folks could utilize this option and still receive a portion of their dividend after the fact?
Through the chair to Chair Carrick, Representative Brox is providing a means for people to have a choice and an easy, efficient manner of donating their PFD back to the general fund in whatever increments of the dividend they see fit, in 10% increments. If they would like to donate 10%, wonderful. If they would like to donate 100%, even more wonderful. But I think he just wants to provide more options and choice to the people of Alaska.
Other questions or comments? Thank you to Mr. Nye and the committee members for having a good conversation on this. Seeing no further discussion, I'm going to set an amendment deadline for House Bill 11 of Wednesday, May 14th at 5 p.m., which is tomorrow. And at this time, we are going to set the bill aside. The last item on today's agenda is consideration of amendments on House Bill 24, aggravating factors at sentencing, from Representative Josephson. Before we go into amendments, is there any additional discussion on the underlying bill? Seeing none, briefities. House State Affairs is back on the record, and I think we had just gotten to amendments on House Bill 24. Representative Vance, did you want to move your amendment?
I move amendment number one.
And I object. Would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes. This amendment clarifies and strengthens language in the aggravator by making it more inclusive. It's constitutionally sound and consistent with principles of equal protection. Rather than listing a narrow and potentially incomplete set of protected characteristics, this amendment ensures that any individual who's targeted based upon hate or bias because of an association with any particular group is afforded the same protection under this aggravator. We all have a variety of groups of people that are could be targeted for a variety of reasons, and we don't know who that next group could be for whatever reason. So this language is mirrors what at least one other state's already enacted, and it refers to individuals being targeted based on an actual or perceived membership in or association with an identifiable group, defined broadly to include mental, physical, biological, cultural, political, or religious characteristics. It's comprehensive. It avoids inadvertently excluding victims who are part of less commonly recognized communities, and it accounts for evolving social contexts. When I think about the laws that we're passing, I want it to work 10, 15, 25 years from now, and this would do that. So whether someone's being targeted for political beliefs, religious association, disability, or any other shared group trait, this amendment makes it clear that biased-based crimes against them are taken seriously. So the goal of this amendment is equal protection, that we're not putting any one person or group over the other, but affording them the same equal treatment. So I ask for your consideration on this, and look forward to the discussion.
And before we continue, I just wanted to invite Mr. Alper, who's carrying the legislation for Representative Josephson, who is in the Finance Committee right now and not available, to come and join us. Mr. Alper, do you have a comment from the sponsor on Amendment Number 1?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Ken Alper, staff to Representative Josephson, who apologizes that he can't be here. He is up in the Finance Committee, like you said. He appreciates the language. He appreciates what Representative Vance is trying to do. He was not comfortable with the language. He felt it was a little bit too vague. He was discomforted that it, in addition to sort of removing what he's trying to add to the bill, it also seems to be repealing the existing enumeration of protected classes in the hate crime statute, that might just be a little bit too vague. You know, that most states have some form of this statute on their books as an aggravating factor, and we were both curious how statistically the people that track those things would even consider this language. Would it be considered protective? You know, how it, the 24 states that protect LGBT people, that sort of thing, would it qualify as that? Because we didn't quite understand how it worked and it was eliminating what already existed, he just wasn't comfortable with the language. Thank you for asking.
I have a question as well. As I read the language, I just wonder if are political and religious beliefs currently a protected class for this type of crime somewhere else besides the section we've deleted?
Madam Chairman, I believe the Department of Law is the best position to answer that question.
Looks like we don't have anyone from the Department of Law. I see Nancy Mead back there. I don't know if you want to, if I could.
I'm not sure of that answer. I'm sorry.
Okay. I didn't think, probably. So I don't think we have anyone to answer that question, but just looking at the language of the bill being deleted, we're not referencing currently political or religious beliefs, and I have some concern about listing them as protected classes for this purpose. I think it's really, it's a lot easier to just sort of claim to have certain political beliefs, especially for purposes of a group association. And I'm just a little bit uncomfortable with those two things being added into this language.
Madam Chair, I have Google's answer.
Representative Himshute.
According to Google, in the U.S., federal law protects individuals from discrimination or harassment based on several characteristics known as protected classes. And again, this is just Google. These include race, color, religion, sex, including sexual orientation, gender identity, and pregnancy, national origin, age, disability, and genetic information. State and local laws may also provide protection against discrimination based on other characteristics like marital status. I wouldn't call that, you know, it's not a legal opinion, for sure.
And I also would just note, this is statute specifically related to hate crimes, not necessarily protected classes.
So, Madam Chairman, the word creed that is being removed often reflects political and religious. It's deeply held beliefs. But we don't really use the term creed as often anymore. So that's a little bit of the change, is trying to encompass the words that we are more familiar with that reflect the language that's being removed.
Is there any additional discussion on Amendment Number 1? Representative Holland?
Well, with some trepidation, the language being proposed in the bill to me is recognizable and familiar in terms of its purpose and its protections. The language that's being proposed to me is yet a different list, as opposed to getting rid of lists, and it offers a broad set of characteristics that I'm not clear provide the clarity of our experience and our efforts to try and root out hate and targeted people. And I'm particularly concerned and trying to wrap my head around if sexual orientation or gender identity, which we're trying to add and protect, whether that would fit into a class of mental, physical, biological, cultural, political, or religious belief. And I can't understand how that would work. So for those reasons, I would support maintaining the language that we have and not adopting the amendment. Thank you.
Yes, I'll comment too.
Representative,
that's
Hemshire.
Okay. Through the chair, what I'm worried about here is it would broaden, because all of us are in so many different groups that any crime could be considered aggravated. It would be, in my mind, too broad. To quote a committee colleague, I think it was old, white, bald men or something, that would be a group, right? And how can you prove that someone was mugged and it was or was not a hate crime? But if someone was mugged and it was because they're Jewish, you wouldn't be mugging because they're Jewish. Did you target the person because they're Jewish? Is that different? This is sticky. It's very sticky. Mm-hmm. It's not a hate crime when you mug someone. You're just mugging someone. But if you can show that you've been mugging people and you only targeted people coming out of synagogue, is that then a hate crime?
Which, just to Representative Himshute's point, I agree that Representative Vance, the word creed is not used very often, and it's sort of a fuzzy word. However, The amendment deletes that, and so I think even under the scenario where we keep the language as is, that potential situation that Rep. Hemshute just described would potentially be covered based on the comment that you made earlier. I'm looking to see if there's any additional comment or discussion. I'm not seeing any.
I could just make one more comment.
Representative Hemshute.
I just want to say through the chair, I like the thought exercise here very much. But I want to stick with what's been tested in the courts. And I think, you know, trust Google or not, I think this language that's currently in the bill has been tested. And so I'm more comfortable with what's in the bill, but I am really enjoying the mental gymnastics is too belittling. That's what I want to say. But the thinking that I'm having to do right now is a nice challenge. Thank you. But, yeah, I'm uncomfortable going with untested language. I want to stick with what we know has stood up in the courts for now.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, through the chair, to the chair, to whoever. Seems to me you guys are struggling to find a way to object to this, which is really just expanding what's in the bill itself. So seems to me the fix is in. You're probably going to vote it down anyways. But did you have a legal memo when you got this amendment? I mean, this was drafted by Ledge Legal, right? So we had it drafted by lawyers. I suspect that it was probably had some basis in being tested in the courts. All this does to me is expand. I mean, Representative Josephson last year had a deal where to protect synagogues and churches, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think that this is a bad thing to increase the classes of people that would be protected under this bill. But I suspect that you guys are intent on making sure it says gender identity in there. So if that's the way it's going to go, then we might as well just dispense with the rest of the discussion and vote on it.
Well, Representative McCabe, I would take a little bit of...
None intended.
Yeah.
I'm just reading the room.
I would object a bit to the idea that we're not earnestly having the discussion here today, because I do think that that is taking place. I will say I'm not struggling on my objection to the amendment because I think the intent of the bill sponsor was very clear to add two important and actually pretty common folks experiencing hate crimes right now to hate crime statute. And this amendment essentially guts that out and adds in whole cloth substitute language. So I am appreciating the discussion, but my objection is actually quite solid. And I just want to appreciate Representative Vance for bringing forward an amendment that allows us to have a dialogue on the issue. But I would take some exception to the idea that it's a foregone outcome completely. And I think that committee discussion, even when it is still valuable.
I follow up, if you don't mind.
Representative McCabe.
I don't think it guts it at all. I think it adds to it. I think the language that you're intending to get in there is still included in what's in this amendment. And maybe that's where the difference of opinion is. Sexual orientation or gender identity is absolutely included in what this amendment is trying to insert into it. So it's actually making it more robust and including some things that we would like to see in a bill such as this. So, but I appreciate the discussion as well. No offense intended. I just am kind of reading the room, and it's, you know, you're struggling to find a way to say no. So
if there's no further discussion. Sorry, Vice Chair Story, you had been in the queue.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you. And I really feel like it's important to name it, to name sexual orientation and gender identity, because there's just been such clear discrimination and around those two topics, around people suffering. So I prefer the naming it, seeing it. I think it does make it clear. So That's what I would prefer. I thought about, should we put it, amend to the amendment and put it in Rep. Vance's language and add sexual orientation or gender identity, and just thinking about that, because I remember very much Rep. Josephson's religious beliefs bill last year. But I think I'm comfortable leaving it sexual orientation and gender identity.
I'm going to go for final comments on the amendment. Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So, yeah, final comments. I don't disagree with you, Representative Story, that there have been a number of recent sort of focuses or hate crimes on sexual orientation and gender identity. Mm-hmm. There have been many, many thousands more based on religious beliefs, characteristics, political beliefs in the last 100 years or so, biological, cultural, all of those should be included in this bill because they are exactly what we're trying to prevent. So it's just that sexual orientation and gender identity is the newest and the highest focus. So I think you would, I mean, I'm sure that we could have a big, long history lesson on who all has been attacked for their religious beliefs or for their physical characteristics, bald, old, fat, white guys, notwithstanding. But you see my point? This amendment adds to it. It doesn't gut it or detract from it at all, other than it takes out the words sexual orientation and gender identity. Thanks for the final follow-up.
Representative Hemshue.
Well, I'll just wade in one more time. My concern through the chair is the vagueness of it and if it would stand up. And I think I like expanding so that people are protected. All people are protected. But I struggle with whether it would hold up to a test, whereas the language that's here now we know has held up to the test. I'm probably just repeating myself, but I'm enjoying this amendment. Thank you. Enjoying doesn't mean saying yes. But I'm enjoying the thought. Thank you.
The objection is maintained. Will the clerk please call
May
the roll?
May I have wrap-up?
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Vance, in wrap-up.
Thank you. I think this is important enough to warrant wrap-up, and I do appreciate the conversation. And I did speak briefly on the floor, the busy floor with the sponsor, where he said that he wasn't quite sure about it. So I'm not surprised about the amendment not being accepted, and that's okay. But the point is to get us thinking about hate crime and who we want to protect. And the sponsors made it very clear for a number of years, his goal to include sexual orientation and gender identity into the hate crime, the aggravators for hate crimes. What this amendment tries to do is include it to any group of individuals who are specifically targeted for whatever reason that includes mental, physical, biological, cultural, political, or religious beliefs. It could be for a variety of things, but they are specifically being targeted out of hate for that association. And that could be the old white guy, old bald fat white guys, right? It could be because they're Jewish. It could be because of their gender identity. It could be because they're from a certain country. There's a variety of reasons that people are unfortunately inspired to hate and take action because of an association with a certain group. And that's what this intends to do, is not elevate any individuals or groups of people above another. And I'm not comfortable with hate crimes. I don't like that we would, it's almost like a thought crime. And that's push the envelope on what I think liberty should be. And so this amendment was to try to provide that equal protections under the law. Because as I mentioned earlier, 10 years from now, we don't know who the targeted group du jour is going to be. and I hate to say it that way, but mankind has a way of finding people to target. And it's, we've all experienced it from the playground to the legislature, you know, to what's going on in our own hometowns. And this amendment seeks to level that playing field and get us to that place that we can't anticipate as lawmakers who that next targeted group would be, because when people are in that place to harm someone, they're motivated by things that are beyond a reasonable person, right? And so that's the whole premise of this, is that we're not elevating one group of individuals over another, but providing that, you know, if it were to come to a prosecutor, come to a jury, they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that that person was targeted because of. And that's how the aggravator would be added on to that crime is, well, it wasn't just a random robbery. It was because you looked like Kevin. And that could be a thing, right? I wish we didn't have to deal with these types of laws, but we do, because there's evil in the heart of man. So I appreciate the conversation, and it's been very respectful, and know that this is just an area that we respectfully disagree, because the sponsor has been working on this legislation for a long time. So with that, those are my final comments on my long comments on my amendment. And thank you for allowing me.
Thank you, Representative Vance. The objection is maintained. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative McCabe.
Yes.
Representative Holland.
No.
Representative Himshute.
No.
Representative Vance.
Yes.
Representative Story.
No.
Chair Carrick.
No.
3A, 4NA.
With the vote of 3A's and 4NA's, the amendment has not been adopted. And with no more amendments, this brings us back to the underlying bill. Is there any additional discussion on House Bill 24? Seeing none, Vice Chair Story, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House Bill 24, also known as 34-LS0250/N, be moved from the House State Affairs Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Object.
Representative Vance, would you like to speak to your objection?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the dialogue, and I think it's very important that we have things like this on the record, especially when it comes to hate crimes. I am going to oppose this bill for the reasons that I had the amendment, is because I want equal protection under the law. I don't want to prioritize one group of people over another. That's not true liberty. And when we are adding sexual orientation or gender identity, I think we are getting into an area that can cause great concern, that we're taking a very small percentage of the population and elevating them above others. When you talk about the other protected classes here of color, creed, physical or mental disability, ancestry or national origin, or race or sex, those are things that are easily defined and have been tested by the courts for quite some time. And they are broad-based across our citizens. And I feel like this bill is taking a small group and elevating it above others. And I think that we're on dangerous ground by doing that, because not that they don't deserve any less protection. However, this is an aggravating factor. This is in addition to the crime that they've committed. And I cannot support that, because I think that everyone should be equal under the law. So I'm going to be maintaining my objection.
Representative Himshu?
I'm just thinking of, I'm going to need help with this potentially. Shepherd was his last name.
Matthew Shepherd.
Thank you. Matthew Shepherd, who was, I think, just a gay man who was murdered for being gay. And that's different than me being murdered. And yet, I mean, is it not different? There's a purpose behind his murder that is born of hate. And I suppose there has to be hate to murder anyone. But I could randomly be murdered, just like anyone. But if you are murdered because you're gay, somehow it feels different to me. I can't put my finger on it exactly, but I feel like I'm equally likely to be murdered as anyone in this room, whereas a gay person walks around knowing that they have a slightly higher risk of being murdered. I guess that's my best explanation for what I think I'm thinking.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. So in response to that, so do many Arabs in the United States right now walk around in fear of being attacked because they're Arab. Many Jewish people walk around in fear of being attacked because they're Jewish. I mean, you can go to any class of people that is different from me, and people will target them because they are different. And to select just two groups of people in this bill without including all the other groups that may be targeted for a hate crime is a mistake. And I think that's what we tried to get to with the amendment. Well, you can after I'm done talking.
Sorry.
That's what we tried to get to with the amendment. I mean, I know women in this building right now who fear being targeted because they're a woman. Is that a hate crime? You know, we haven't really included them in there, although the amendment said gender. So to me, I think that we are just limiting it to two people just to send some kind of a social statement, two groups of people, sorry, to send some kind of a woke social statement when we could have sent a really robust bill out and said we're worried about hate crimes for Arabs, Jewish, could be Ukrainians, could be Russians, depending on the political climate. And I think we make a mistake when we try to elevate two groups of people above others.
I'm going to look to the committee for additional comments from others who have not spoken yet, Representative Holland, and then we'll come back.
Great. Just through the chair, I just would like to clarify my understanding and my support for this bill, because we are not targeting just two groups, as I understand this bill. We are amending a statute to add these two race, sex, color, creed, physical or mental disability, ancestry, and national origin. Many of the different people discussed here are covered by the existing statute. We are clarifying and adding some important groups that have suffered greatly in our society to clarify their protection and to clarify that acts against people because of sexual orientation or gender is a hate crime. But we are not taking out the importance of hate against race, sex, and these other areas here. So I don't want anyone listening to this or reading the record thinking that this bill was only targeting just two characteristics. This existing bill provided hate protection. We're providing broader hate protection. Thank you.
Seeing no new comments, I'll go now to Representative Himshu.
I think Representative Holland pretty much covered it, but yeah, someone who is in fear because they're Arab would be national origin. Someone who's in fear because they're Jewish would be creed. So I'm hoping that people who need that additional protection from targeted hate crimes have it, and I'm happy to add additional folks who have been targeted for specific protected characteristics.
Is it a new comment, Representative McKee?
Just in reply. So one of the things is we don't feel necessarily that creed is encompassing what we think of as religious beliefs, right? So maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but it seems to be outdated language, as is the Google's going to talk
I've
to
got
us
it.
Again.
I looked it up early. So, creed is a system of Christian or other religious belief of faith, according to Google, again. I had to look it up, though, because I was like, what is creed?
So I'd like to sort of wrap up discussion on this legislation. I was not here as chair. I was in another bill hearing when this bill was first brought forward. I just wanted to remind the committee of a couple of things. This is from the sponsor's presentation. One is that anti-gender identity hate crimes and anti-sexual orientation hate crimes have steadily increased from the FBI's uniform crime reporting from about 2020 to 2023. A second point that I noted from the sponsor's presentation is that 33 states have taken some action to include these types of protections in statute, with 10 states adding addressing hate and bias crimes based on sexual orientation only, and another 23 states addressing hate or bias crimes based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And those states are as broadly diverse as including places like New Mexico, Texas, Louisiana, Florida, Georgia. So this is not just a liberal or woke issue. And the third point I'd like to make, again, from the sponsor's presentation, is that among all the states, Alaska ranks 23rd, having 2.3 per 100,000 people in terms of hate crimes that we know of in 2019. And again, the status shows that those numbers have been steadily increasing nationwide. I can tell the members of the committee anecdotally that there is not an issue or a group of people in this building that I hear more from about being unsafe at work and feeling uncomfortable at work than folks expressing a gender identity that is not as well known to people. And I am very concerned, and obviously this is a deeply personal issue for me. I'm deeply concerned for Alaskans who do not currently have these protections. There are protections for every mentioned group that was brought up in this discussion. To Rep. Holland's point, again, we're not changing the existing underlying statute. Therefore, folks who are Arab who experience hate crimes would be covered under race or perhaps national origin, as would Ukrainians. Women would be covered under sex. Currently, it is potentially up for some additional consideration and maybe further amendment down the road about what all is encompassed in creed and how that gets interpreted in the law. But to put this legislation forward is to recognize a group that is currently and increasingly experiencing hate crimes and discrimination in this country, in this state. And I'm a strong supporter of it. And I really do appreciate the thorough discussion on how to broaden the language for the future, however. And I do appreciate that Representative Vance was here to have a respectful discussion about that today, and appreciate that that came forward. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
All right. Will the Secretary please call the roll on House Bill 24?
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative McCabe.
No.
Representative Holland.
Yes.
Representative Vance.
No.
Representative Himshut.
Yes.
Chair Carrick.
Yes.
5 yea, 2 nay.
So with a vote of 5 yeas and 2 nays, House Bill 24 has been moved from the House State Affairs Committee, and we will sign the paperwork after adjournment. That does conclude House State Affairs for today. Our next meeting will be Thursday, May 15th, here at 3:15 or potentially later, depending on floor. At that hearing, we will take on any amendments for House Bill 1 on gold and silver specie from Representative McCabe. I think we extended the deadline already. If not, there is an extended deadline. I plan to work with the sponsor's office on just a clarifying amendment from our office. If there are any additional amendments, please let me know as soon as possible. We'll also have an introductory hearing on House Bill 133, Payment of Contracts, from Representative Hemshute, take public testimony and any amendments on House Bill 11 on PFD contributions to the general fund from Representative Prox, and have continued discussion and public testimony on House Bill 4, which we heard at the very beginning of session, on presidential write-in votes from Representative Sadler. And with no further issues to come before the committee, we are adjourned at 4:47 p.m.